The best resource that I can list on this is Leroy Iams' tape by the same title, How to Form a Team. I think he also has a tape out called the Value of Teamwork, I think it's called. That's pretty good. And I think you can get both of those tapes from the Glen. Max may have them in the library. You do have them in the library. Okay, so you can rip a copy out of the library. A little cheaper that way. But I do want to cover with you this concept or this thing of how to form a team. And let me say right now that it may be just a personality thing, or it may be, I don't know, but to me, forming a team, it's very, very easy, and it's vital. Man, I'm just not sure I can function without one. I don't know. But to me, there's nothing more exciting and nothing more encouraging and thrilling and fulfilling, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, than have three or four guys around you that've got the same thing on their heart that you've got on yours. They think like you do. You're just one in the spirit. You're one in heart. You're with one accord. Man, there's nothing more thrilling than that to me. Just get a bunch of guys that, man, I mean, you just go down the road. I don't care what you're doing, what the activity is, what time of the day, what time of the night. It's just tremendous to be around this group of guys. And I say guys, you know, a little bit generically here. It can be guys and gals too. But this thing of one accord. You know, Leroy shared with me one time that he looked up in a concordance this little term, with one accord and with one heart, or with one accord, they did this throughout the book of Acts. And he said, you know, that term, that little phrase is used 13 times in the New Testament, and 11 of them are in the book of Acts. Isn't that something? And you read about the Acts of the Apostles and the way God someone said it should be called the Acts of the Holy Spirit. But as just the Holy Spirit through these young apostles and what they did in those early days. Man, that's just so fantastic. But one of the primary characteristics of these men is that they were of one accord and with one heart, with one accord, they did this. And I'll tell you, nothing is more thrilling to me than that. And this thing about how to form a team, a little band of men that are of one heart, are of one accord, so tremendous. I really just groove on that to no end. I really like that. And to me, I don't know why it is, but to me it seems easy. To Leroy, it was a snap. I was talking to a guy one time that was with Dan Green, and Dan has a tremendous ministry. He's at the University of Colorado in Boulder now. And Dan made a comment to this guy, and he told me later on, he said, forming a team is kind of hard for me, but for Chuck, it's a snap. I do not know why. I don't know what the characteristics are or anything about it, but I guess for some people it's a little bit more difficult than others. But if you can get this thing together, oh, gang, there's nothing more thrilling. Nothing more thrilling to me. How to form a team. First thing that we have down here, let's talk about the characteristics of the team leader. And the characteristics of a team leader. Let me confess some sin here. One time I was, you know, I share with you guys, you know, sometimes you guys think that guys stand up and they say, well, you know, I'm really undisciplined, or I'm really unorganized. And you think, well, you think you're unorganized, you just ought to know me. Man, and you say that, but really you're quite disciplined, or you're quite organized. And I stand up and I tell you guys, man, if you knew how unorganized or how undisciplined this type of thing is. But you don't believe that, do you? Well, 2 or 3 years ago, maybe you do believe that. A couple of years ago, I had a workshop on how to form a team or how to lead a team or something like that at Hume Lake at a Christian conference we were having. I was also in charge of, you know, the program, and I had 2 or 3 other things that running around doing. So I had a workshop about 3 o'clock one afternoon on this how to form a team, hour and a half long. Well, as usual, I didn't have my act together when I got to the conference. I thought, man, see, Friday night we'll go through the program. Saturday morning we got this. I know what I'll do. I got from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock, and I'll prepare the outline and everything, and then if 1 to 3, I'll go over it again. I'll get it all worked out. Anyway. But it just so happened that we've had some real snafus in the program, and we spent from about 1 to 2:30 getting the program ready for that night. And I went back to my room, and I had a workshop in 20 minutes, and I hadn't even started on it. Hour and a half workshop. Boy, you talking about a contrite spirit. Man, I got down on my knees. Oh, I tell you. I said, Lord, I've blown it again. And that's not the first time it ever happened. And I doubt if it'll be the last. But I got on my knees and said, Boy, Lord, I've blown it again. And I just began to pray. I said, you know, God, but you know, I know that you love me, and you want to do some things through me here, and these are your people, and you want to help your people. And so, God, I just pray, just because of grace, not for any other reason, but just because you love me and because of grace, that you'd help me and give me some ideas so I can help these people. And I just, boy, you know, God, I have the audacity to ask you that today, right here on my knees, with 15 minutes to go. I've got the audacity to ask that because that's the basis on which you operate. And I'm in Jesus, and I can ask you to do that. And so, Lord, I just ask you to do that. I got up off my knees and took out a pad like this, and in 15 minutes wrote down basically what I'm going to share with you today. I just wrote down, okay, 12 characteristics. Yeah, I need it. Wrote down 5. Let's see, well, what are the ingredients? And as fast as I could write, thoughts came to mind just like that. And then I finished it up, and I walked over to my workshop and reviewed it as I walked over and spent an hour and a half with those people and just laid it all out for them. So I want to, these characteristics of a team leader, this you might can improve on what I'm going to share with you are the characteristics of a team leader, because I wrote that out in about 45 seconds. So you might can improve on this. But boy, I tell you, it's fantastic. You know, one time I prayed, I said, you know, God, you know what I really want to learn this year? I want to learn what it means to walk by grace. And that, boy, I tell you, you're talking about it. That's a good prayer, because what happens is God's always bailing you out. And that's he just constantly demonstrates what grace means to you. That was some good times. One time I prayed, boy, Lord, I pray, you know, Hebrews 5:8, though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. So I prayed, boy, God, I pray that I could suffer that I might learn obedience. Don't pray that one. Boy, that was horrible, you know. Oh, Lucy. But well, hold off on that one for a while. Ooh. You know, I prayed that thing when I was living with Max that summer, and Max can tell you about some of those times. One morning I quit, you know, and one night I threw my prayer book away, and you know, all my prayer requests. I was out praying, I was so disgusted in this, and God, you don't answer these prayers, and I threw that thing. You know. It was a rough summer, man. But weeping, tears, misunderstandings, criticism, oh, agony. And you know, it took me about 9 years before I could pray that again and really mean it. But here about 2 or 3 months ago, I prayed that again. I said, boy, God, I think there's some things in my life, and if it takes suffering, God, I really want to suffer if I can learn obedience in those areas. And I really meant it. Now, several times before that, you know, I prayed it, and I get through, and I says, God, you know I didn't mean that. And because I think back on some of those times, and man, I don't want none of that. But anyway, but if you want to pray a good prayer, you just pray, boy, God, teach me what it means to walk by grace. That's a goodie. That's fun. Characteristics of a team leader. Number one is he walks with God. In other words, there is a quality of life about the guy. The more you spend time with him, the more you realize that the man is walking in harmony and in fellowship with God. The second thing I wrote down here is that the direction of his ministry, his objectives, and this type of thing, I won't write on all these on the board because that'll take too much time, but you can tell as you're with the guy and the things that he wants to do and the things that are on his heart, and kind of the objectives of his life, or the things that he wants to do in the ministry, the general flow of the ministry, have just a resounding scriptural sound to them. You think, man, that sounds good. And the guy said, well, you know what, the thing I've really been praying about, the thing that's really on my heart, and he shares these things, and you think, boy, that sounds good. And it just has that kind of that scriptural ring to it, or that godliness about what he wants to do with his life, or the direction he wants to go. You just think, man, that must have come right out of the book of Acts or something. That sounds good. But that's another characteristic of the team leader, that, you know, you can get around the guy and you say, well, let's do this. And you think, you know, I'm not sure that's a good thing. But whatever the guy wants to do, the direction of his life, the avenue of his ministry, and the kind of thing he wants to give his life to, just has that real solid, clear, scriptural ring to it. Man, boy, that guy really must have gotten that from God. I mean, God must be communicating. The guy must really get the direction of his life from God. Well, that's the second thing. He kind of gets the direction of his life, the flow of his life. You just know it comes from God. The third thing I put down is that he is a pace setter both in life and ministry. And this is not to say that the man is perfect, because every guy that, you know, there were some things in Leroy's life, as much as I admired that man and as much as he built into my life, there were several things that, I saw in Leroy's life that were flaws. I could see them. And I think, you know, I don't want that in my life. And you know, out of Calpol, you know, as much as I admired Leroy, and as much as he helped me, and as good a man as he was, good grief. But there were a couple of things. So I'm not talking about a guy that's perfect. I mean, without flaw. There's none, there's spotless. You know, you're not going to find one of those. And so, but the guy, as far as, you know, his the way he lives his life, and the kind of the habits of his life, and the general direction of his life, and so forth, and the way he treats his family or his children, or the way he goes about his job, the way he works, and just his general approach in life, and his general approach in the ministry, and things like, he's really a pace setter. That's the characteristic of a good team leader. The guy's a pace setter. You can follow his example and not get in trouble. You can follow his example and be Christ-like. He's a pace setter both in life and ministry. The fourth thing I wrote down is he communicates. And this is two ways. First of all, he really keeps the troops informed as to what's going on, and he goes to an area director's meeting or some kind of thing like that, and he comes back and he takes copious notes while he's there, and then he comes back and he fills his gang in on what's going on. Keeps the troops informed. And man, I tell you, the guy, it really is important. Guys really feel that they're a part of your life when you share so much with them about what's going on upstairs, you know. The big, the big thing at the top. And I let guys read, on our core team, man, when I get a letter from headquarters, a global report, or I get a Dear Gang letter from Warren Sandy or something like that, man, the whole bunch reads it. Man, we get our core team together and we just pass those things around. I want those guys to know what Lauren's thinking, what Scott is thinking, and what's happening in Holland, good, bad, or green, you know. I want these guys to know what's going on. And I really keep the troops informed. I want them to know what, if I'm picking up any criticism or if I'm picking up some compliments and things. I just really keep the troops informed. I really work at that. And then the other thing about communication, and that is, I want to keep up to date on where they're living and how's it going with you. But the guy's a good communicator. He's up to date. He knows what's happening. He's informed. He keeps them informed, and he stays informed himself. So it's kind of that kind of a two-way thing. Be sure your troops know what's happening, and be sure that they're informed, and then be also informed as to what's happening in their life. But this two-way communication here. And then the fifth thing I wrote down is that the guy is transparent. He is an open, honest, genuine guy. He's just a transparent individual. And Lord Gang, was it Bill O'Brien that was talking about how they'll read you like a book? Was he the guy that covered that? No, I'm sorry. It wasn't him. A couple of days ago, I was out at Rehoboth, New Mexico, in a a Navajo Indian reservation, and we have a summer training program out there, and the director of the mission there, Mr. Ed Oppenheisen, gave us a briefing. And see, these teams are going to go out and live in these tribes. One's going up to Ship Rock or someplace with the Zuni tribe, and one's going up to Farmerville or something, and they're kind of going off and for weeks to be in these tribes and working with these people. And so he gave us a little thing on the on working with the Indians, a little orientation. And he says one thing, he says, the Indians won't talk very much to you, but he said they will read you like a book. Man, you'll get 10 minutes with them, and they can tell you exactly what you're thinking, what your attitude is, what your concepts are, what your prejudices are. They'll read you like a book. And he said, so when you go in that tribe, you better not try to fake it. They'll read that in 10 minutes. Well, gang, if you're going to be a team leader and working with your guys, you've got to be genuine. You've got to be open, very honest, sometimes blatantly honest, sometimes embarrassingly honest and genuine. Now, like I say, you know, you might could add a few more to that. I've thought through on some of these since that time, since that little conference. But I would say that, you know, that these are some critical areas. There may be more, and you may can state it a little better. But man, the thing that I think one of the chief, one of the important areas here in this teamwork and forming a team is that the guy who's leading the band, he's got to be real. He's got to be a man who walks with God, and he gets his direction from God, and he communicates, and he's setting the pace, and he's genuine, he's real, and this type of thing. And if you're not, that thing will never gel. It will just never gel. Well, the second thing I wrote down is, let me skip down here a little bit. Point number two. That is, as you get your team together, establish some common objectives. Now, let me write down here just, for instance, your objectives. Let me just talk to you a little bit about objectives, okay? Your objectives need to be challenging yet reachable. Small plans do not inflame the minds of men. You know, we've said that several times here. Challenging but reachable. And you know what happens, gang? I think your plans, well, let me write challenging down here. I think your plans also need to be visionary. Your objectives, I mean, need to be visionary. It's a step toward the next thing. But gang, this is not a dead-end street. What we're going to do is go over and do this and this and this and this. And then that's it. That's all. Dead end. Quit. Stop. Man, because when we get that done, you know what? And then we're going for this. And then we'll reach it. You know what? Then we're going for this. And gang, you know what? A few years down the road, man, we're going after this whole joking city. You understand that, gang? And your objectives have got to have that air of vision about them. A visionary. They've got to be able to see that this is not just some little dead-end street, neat little thing that we've dreamed up here. But man, this is simply a step toward greater things. By the way, let me just throw in a little thing here too, that this is where participatory planning comes in too. The guys that have got to go out there and slug it out ought to have a little part in coming up with you know, what they decided to do. They're the ones that have got to get the job done. They're the ones that ought to plan it. And so participatory planning. And I was out with a guy last night for a little while, and we talked about this participatory planning. And let me just throw you, just to clarify that a little bit. Do we need to do that? Have you guys done that a little bit, participatory planning, how that works? How you come into a little plan, but yet you, really they come up with it? Let me give you my role as a leader in a participatory planning session, okay? I come in, and I've got a general idea of where we need to go. And we got these four or five guys or so sitting around here, you know. And I got an idea where we need to go. You know, I haven't been sitting over in the closet. But I've got a little idea. And so I come in and I'm thinking, you know, boy, the thing we really need to hit this year is evangelism. Man, we need to get some outreach. Man, we need to get some new blood. We're getting ingrown and stale. And so I think, boy, gang, what's a general thrust that you guys feel we need to really hit this year? Kind of, as you think about the ministry and as you review last year, what do you feel should be our general thrust this year? And the guy says, well, boy, I tell you, I really feel we need to get deep in the Word. Man, Bible study, that's the thing I think we ought to hit. Man, we've got to get some depth in the Word. Building. Well, see, I'm thinking, I was thinking evangelism, outreach. And so my role, I'm a guy who asks the question and tries to help crystallize the thinking and discern and come up with the facts that will help us to know whether or not do we need to go this way or do we in fact need to go this way. For instance, I might say, well, how do you other guys feel about this, you know? What do the rest of you guys think? Well, yeah, it sounds pretty good. Well, let me ask you this. How many disciple makers we got? Well, we got about 14. Well, how many D's we got? How many disciples? Well, let's see. We review our statistics and our year-end report and all this kind of thing, and we got 37. Well, how many young Christians do we have? Well, we got, let's see here. We're in touch now with about 26. Of course, we don't have any converts because we're just starting. And the converts of last year are the young Christians, you know, okay? And so so we're looking at all this, and I think, you know, let's draw a pyramid, okay? Or a little triangle. So we kind of draw this thing a little bit, you know? And so I say, well, I see now. Do we really need to concentrate on building, or... I wonder if we ought to think about broadening the base a little bit. What do you guys think about that? See, my role is to ask the questions and to come up with the facts. It helps to crystallize and to kind of blow away the thinking, help us to crystallize our thinking. And that is my role in a participatory planning session. I don't go in and say, hey, gang, what do you guys think we ought to do? And this guy says, well, build. And this guy says, well, this. And this guy says, well, so I said, well, okay, well, listen, why don't we just kind of do a lot of evangelism and try to broaden the base? Okay, next question is, you know, that didn't do anything. Man, they don't feel a part of that. But this guy over here, he said, you know, that's what I said I'd do. And so I'm going to get with it. If he made the plans, then he feels the responsibility of it. But if I make the plans, then they'll sit back under the shade of the tree and say, well, Chuck, let me know how it comes out, will you? But that's kind of the as you get together and you set your objectives in your little team, that's kind of your role. Now, gang, if you've got a real small team and these guys, you know, they don't, when you say objectives and thrust, they don't even know what you're talking about. You know, the guy's just barely a disciple and he's just been a Christian a year and a half. Then you're going to have to play more of a dominant role, okay? So you got to judge where your guys are and how much leadership you've got to exercise with them. But the guys I work with now, the LDMs that we have out there and this type of thing, man, I just let them run with it. Because their thinking, their mentality, their maturity, they can figure that stuff out. They can figure that out. And so that's, you know, I just kind of let them, I give them as much slack as I possibly can. I give them as much of the ball game as I can. And I just kind of sit back and watch. You know, in our ministry out there, we have already planned every activity that we'll do next year. Every rally. Every fun night, every flick night, every party, everything, you know. We've conferences, we planned it all out the whole year. And when we took us two nights to do that, back in Slo, and so the team leaders got together down at the office, and we went through all this and worked on this and so forth. And I was with them the first night, kind of led the discussion and so forth. Then the second night, Dwight Hill had come through, and he wanted to go down and see a campus and a base about 90 miles south of town, and And so he and I went down to do that, and we got hung up down there with a couple, and we couldn't get back in time. And so I called the guys and said, listen, I'm going to be about an hour and a half late. Dave, run the meeting, okay? And so, okay, and when I got there, we had left off the night before in January. And when I got there, they were in April. And I sat outside the door. Me and Dwight sat out there, or Dwight and I. We sat out there and just talked, and you know, and here these guys were in there going at it, tooth and nail, and arguing, and fussing, and you know, throwing coffee cups at each other, trying to figure this stuff out. And I said to Dwight, I said, you know, Dwight, those guys don't need me. What am I doing hanging around here? You know, listen to those guys. They got this thing scoped out. They don't need me. And they were in there, and they hammered out the whole thing. And after they got it through, I walked in and said, well, what are we going to do next year? And I took out my calendar, and for the big events, I just blocked them in, you know, okay, what's that? Okay, got it. What else? What? And I said, okay, that's it. And they planned over half a year without me. And well, when it comes time, I said, okay, the gang, this is what we said we're going to do, right? Do you feel they're going to feel a responsibility and a part and a vital part of getting that done? Boy, you bet your sweet life. Another thing here about setting objectives is that your objectives must require sacrifice. And this is kind of comes under this area of challenging yet reachable, but they must require sacrifice. And gang, to a degree, the greater the degree of sacrifice, the greater the degree of unity. When I went through boot camp, it was really rough. But you know, when you take about 50 old mangy guys and you put these guys through 10 weeks of torture, one of the things that it does is that it drives these people very close together. And man, we are in there trying to make it together. And one of the things that a ministry where you've got to sacrifice to reach your objectives, it will tremendously help your unity. It will really help that. It will drive you to pull together and work together. I think one of the examples of this is when Bob and I and the guys went over to Taft and worked in that cotton field. But when we first started out, see, my objective was, I'm going to burn up this row, man. There'll be a flame behind me. I'll be moving down here so fast. And then I was changing those nozzles on those sprinkler heads and et cetera. But, you know, toward the end of the day, when this guy was really shot, I knew the guy was sick and this guy was hurting, and I'd get to the end of my row and I'd turn to help him. Man, we were so tired and we'd sacrificed to the point where we just, to get through, we got to help each other. And so I'd say about the last 3 or 4 hours of the day, our concern was to make sure that everybody could make it. And man, we were helping each other and switching roles and just still continuing on, still making progress. But it was one. It was, okay, gang, we need to make this. Let's hit it. Let us do it. Instead of, well, I got my role done. How are you doing? And gang, the more sacrifice it will take, the greater the unity will be of your bunch, up to a point. Now, you can't run that thing out all the way out, you know, and so you got to kill yourself. But a certain degree of sacrifice will really unify your life. And then, as a leader, one of your course objectives throughout the year will be to keep your gang on target. Now, wait a minute, gang. This is what we said we were going to do, right? Gang, are we doing this? Are we staying on target? And one of your jobs throughout the year will be to maintain the objectives, keep everybody on target, and you'll have to keep clarifying the objectives. You'll have to keep clarifying these things. Now, wait a minute, gang. Now, what we mean here now is this, right? This is where we're going, right? Okay, now let's don't get off. Now, let's keep this thing clear, and you'll have to be constantly doing that. Let me just... There's a couple of things that I just discussed that I didn't have written down on the sheet, and they're important, and so I just made a note of them. Okay, next point is that you got this little team together, and you got yourself some objectives, and you know, old Leroy, he's on this tape of his, he's got some classic illustrations. It's really good. He talks about setting all these high standards, and the objective was to keep the sidewalks clean in the neighborhood or something, you know. Well, that didn't challenge anybody. You know? He's got some fans. He really illustrates these things well. I think the guy's really gifted in that.
But he talks about the challenging objectives and this type of thing.
He talks about a dorm. They went after the whole dorm, and it's a beautiful story. You know, it's just really exciting. The next thing I want to talk about is in your team, once you've set your objectives, then you want to be sure that you pray together. Pray together. And see, one of the things you ought to be praying for, of course, are your objectives. Now, Lord, we really feel that you led us to ask you for 25 guys, that's dorm, to study your word. And Lord, we've got 6. And God, I pray that you'd give us some guys on the first floor. But you pray over some of these objectives that you felt the Lord has, you know, led you to set. But you get time together and you pray together, you pray together, you pray together as a bunch. And it's not an open-ended prayer meeting, it's just the team. And when I say you pray together or when you do some of these other things together, it's just the team. Because, gang, it is a team. It is the team. Now, Leroy, when he was in Lincoln, Nebraska, at the ministry there, he'd meet over and they'd all get together and meet over at one of the guys' home. One of the guys on the team was married, and they'd all meet over at his home on Sunday morning pretty early, and they'd pray. And they prayed 3 things. First thing they prayed about was, who's new? And they'd pray for the new Christians that week. And he said, generally there were some. And they'd pray, boy, Lord, this guy, you know, young Bill, he's just a babe. And they'd pray for these new Christians. Well, who's new? Second thing they'd pray for, well, who's close? Our witness, and they'd list a bunch of names. And they'd pray over these guys that had been witnessed to, and he'd gone back to see him a couple of times, and the guy's considering it, but, you know, and he's close. But so they'd pray for these guys that were really close. They'd been talked to and so forth. Then the third category was, who's next? Well, I got this guy down the hall, and I've established a good friendship with him, and we played basketball together the other day, and I'd just really like to go talk to the guy about the Lord this week. So they'd list his name, and man, they'd all pray for him. And we're going to see Jim. And boy, God, I pray that you do a work in Jim's life, and I pray the Holy, et cetera, et cetera, okay? But that's what they'd pray. Lord, who's new this week? Then they'd pray for who's close, and they'd pray for who's next. Every Sunday morning, they got together early, and they prayed for those things, just the team. Can you see how, gang, it'll be tremendously unifying? Isn't that good? Boy, that'll really knit your hearts together. Particularly if you guys are all in the same dorm or you all got the same objective. Well, see that dorm, Lord, boy, God, that's what we're after, that dorm. And so you're all praying about that. Really a unifying thing. Now, in our core team this past year, when I was at Irvine, we got together every Sunday morning about 8 o'clock. We'd have some donuts and coffee. We'd meet down at Gibbs Atkinson, and had 3 other guys, and they all lived in a home down in Corona del Mar. Beautiful little place, right real close to the beach. And we'd get down there about 8 o'clock Sunday morning, and we'd pray. About 45 minutes of prayer on Sunday morning. Then we'd have a donut and a cup of coffee and roll off to Sunday school together. And it's really funny. Every Sunday morning, you know, the people in that church for the first year thought we must have all lived in the same house. Because every Sunday we all walked in together. And we just heard, there's about 15 or 18 of us, we just all walk in together, you know. They just completely freaked them out. But praying together, we used to get together down at that house and we'd pray every Sunday morning. Man, we'd get time, and that was fantastic for us. And usually I'd start off the time, I'd share a little thing out of my quiet time just to encourage the troops, but you know, you don't have to do that. Man, just get together. Who's new this week? And he listed, well, boy, Sue became a Christian last week. Is that good? And then so you'd all pray for old Sue, you know. So, this is good. The next thing you do is you do battle together. Man, get out there and slug it out together. And, you know, witnessing, and you all get together over at Joe's room on Wednesday night. I remember Dwight Hill was telling me when he was at the University of New Mexico that they'd all meet in one guy's room. And man, it'd be guys hanging off the rafters, and it'd just people all over the room. And they'd all meet in this room, and they'd made this big chart and put it up there about all the different Bible studies. And this, and so they say, okay, now we got Bible studies over here and over here, and okay. And then this whole room, they'd get on the knees and they'd pray, and then they'd go out two by two. And about an hour and a half later, they'd come back to this room. Every one of them higher than a kite. Man, God did it. I was telling this guy, and ooh, man, the Holy Spirit did this, and God brought this verse to mind. War stories, you know, out the ears. Just fantastic. Now, every week, the guys go out, a couple of hours of battle together. Well, gang, you got this little team. You get the guys together. Say, okay, gang. Ready? Ready. Let's go get them. So you go out there and get them. And, but just do battle together. That's so good for you as a little bunch, as a team. It just causes you to be thinking about the same things and be heading toward the same direction. It really unifies you. But do some battle together. Another thing I have down here, I don't know what the number is by now, but another thing I have down here is get into the Word together. Do Bible study together. All these things are together. Now, here again, this is just your bunch. Now, you might want to have a big Bible study. When I had a dorm there at the last year at Cal Poly, Monday night we had a Bible study. It's come one, come all. And I taught the book of Matthew. I mean, the guys would come and I'd start in and I'd get so many verses. And when I got that far and the time was up, then that's it. And I just taught the book of Matthew. And we'd run 20, 25 guys in that Bible study. And they'd just come and I'd kind of teach them. And anybody could come to that. Didn't matter if he could be a non-Christian. Anybody could come to that. It's fantastic. Good morale. Guys were hungry. Men, they'd be in there taking notes and writing, asking questions. It was really a good situation. But there was a time, gang, when I drew away with those three or four guys, and man, we broke out the book. And it wasn't the blank then, and it wasn't little STS. It was the Bible. We opened this thing up, and, how'd you break this thing down? Well, I saw three sections. Okay, well, listen. What did the Lord kind of speak to you out of this first six verses? Well, boy, I tell you, right here, I fell through on that, and I did some cross-referencing on that, and I came up with this lesson, and we're studying the book. And that's the team, man. We're getting together and digging around and looking for the Lord in the Scriptures. We don't have this little blank and this type of thing. Now, there's times where we go out and we have the DFDs or the SCLs and the Crusade. I've got a copy of Crusade's 10 Basic Steps, and I've used those before, particularly if there's one topic I really want to cover. I've used that before. But gang, when I get the gang together, we just get into the book. So do your Bible study together. Now, in our core team Bible study there in San Luis Obispo, it's co-ed. And there are three girls in it and about five or six guys. I don't know how many are in it, but whoever, how many dorm ladies we got. And we get together and we study this thing together. But you know, I was talking to Roberta the other day, and I said, or some months ago, and I said, Roberta, does that really meet your needs? I mean, do you feel really free in that core team Bible study? She says, no, and the girls don't, but we have it on Thursday night. We do the same thing on Thursday night. And see, what she had done is on Thursday night, she gets the girls together in her apartment, and there's one other girl out on campus that's in charge of the dorm, and they come down to her apartment, and they spend time in the Word together on Thursday night. Because the girl is a little more reticent to come out with this thing that the Lord really spoke to them about. Because here's some guy, you know, some old bonehead guy, he'll go into this giant deep thing and giant application, and he'll lay this big thing out, you know, and we have the freedom to, you know, say, well, you know, I think you missed it there. Or he might lay this giant thing out, a giant study he did, and all this type of thing. And what happens, you know, right, wrong, or green, I don't know, but what happens is that the girl thinks, you know, I'm not sure mine was that significant. And God really spoke to her about this thing. She thinks, well, I'm not sure that was that important. I don't think they're interested in that. And so she did, right or wrong, I don't know if you feel this way here in Oklahoma or the Midwest or not, I don't know, but out there on the coast, that's how they feel. And so they don't really share that freely. Now, they'll contribute some things, but they won't really just let it all hang out and just pour out their heart, you know, about some of these things. But when they get together on Thursday night over in their apartment, man, it just all comes out. Man, boy, the Lord really spoke to me out of this verse. I remember one night a girl shared, she said, you know, I was reading this verse. And she shared what the verse says, and she said, boy, the Lord spoke to me out of that. Well, and that's all she had to say. And I'm sitting there, and everybody's this ominous silence, you know. Well, and well, that's all, you know. You know. Well, you know, I think a bunch of gals sitting around, you know, that'd probably communicate a little more. But I'm sitting there thinking, well, what the fuck? So anyway, I think the co-ed thing is really good in your Bible study. I really like that. Man, I wouldn't, I just, my thinking, you know, this thing is in putty. But right now, I don't think I like that. I'll stick with that, the co-ed. But you got to give the gals some time just to get away and, you know, do it themselves. I think the gals generally going to need a little thing of their own. And, you know, it'll be an addition to what you're doing, but you just got to kind of kick that into the computer and let them do it. Jim? No, because guys are in our situation right now, they feel very free to express themselves. Now, if there's something that's extremely personal, or it's a little bit just on the manly side, you know, you wouldn't share that in front of a girl anywhere at any time, then, you know, we'll hit that in our man-to-man. But they feel a real freedom to express themselves and to share whatever's on their heart type of thing in the group. And so we don't meet. The guys don't meet. That is our time. Next thing I have down here is have fun together. And here again, you know, I like it co-ed. And we'll all jump, you know, and go to the beach and roar off and play volleyball and hit the surf and play football and, you know, hit the swings. Down on the beaches in California, they're really quite, a lot of them are quite developed. They'll have, you know, swings and big volleyball nets and all kind of stuff, you know. And we'll just go down there and play football and romp and stomp everywhere. And we all, the guys, you really got to do this, the guys. The boundaries is about, you know, 20 feet of shoreline, and then it's just eternity. It's Hawaii. The next boundary is in Hawaii. And so these guys will take a giant sweep to the left, you know, and this guy will run out and start swimming, you know, and he's got this football and he's swimming, and four guys are out there after him, you know. And we just have more fun out there, just, you know, like killing each other, you know. Everybody always gets hurt, you know, gets cut on some shell or old beer can or something and falls down and he's just skinless from his waist down to his knees, you know. He just got rubbed in the sand. Just love it. But here again, when we play volleyball and we got co-ed teams, and we kind of limit our spiking, you know, because, you know, here's some girl over, and you know, she spiked a dude, and there went four fingernails. There went four fingernails right there, you know. So when we do play co-ed sports, you know, we kind of cool it a little bit, you know. But we really try to have a lot of fun together. And I remember one night we went to this pizza place and we got in this, we started spitting ice on each other. You know, it was a gross thing, you know. And one of the things I do is I have the girls give me a key to their apartment in case that sometimes I need to get some time alone, you know, and I just sneak over in their apartment, you know, and there's nobody there all working. I just crawl up in the kitchen, you know, in the kitchen, get the coffee pot going, and man, I just got a good guy, good deal. And so one night we had one of these giant ice throwing contests and everything, and so truce and everything. So we left. I grabbed the guys and said, let's go. So we jumped in the car and went roaring down to, they lived on Balboa Island, you know, a beautiful little apartment down there. So we stashed our cars and crawled in the back door and hid in the closet. So I got big glasses of water and hid in the closet. So we hide in the closet, you know. And so they come in, you know, and they kind of suspecting something. So we looking out the window, and they're driving around and around. You're looking for a car. So they find a signal must be clear, so they pull in and park and come up the back stairs. And I'm in this one closet, and so this one girl goes in the back bedroom. All of a sudden, you hear this blood-curdling scream. And then this water just going everywhere. And then all of a sudden, man, it's just water, and people are coming out of the hallways and going. And We had more fun. Giant water fight in two. We just soaked the place. It went on for about an hour. Then not too long after that, we were having a Bible study, and it just happened to be on the night of the Marine Corps birthday that we were having a Bible study. So the girls all came over, and we're going to sing happy birthday to us. And it was a little bit cool outside. In California, it gets a little cool. So they had on coats and everything, so they sang. And when it got through, they all pulled out water guns and just drenched us. So forget Bible study. Man, we had a giant water fight, you know. Police came about an hour and a half later. It's a bad deal, you know. But you got to have fun together, you know. Giant fun together. We delayed our Bible study about an hour and a half or 2 hours that night, you know. And got to stay flexible. This next point is create an adventurous atmosphere. I'm not sure I need to go into that one, but that's very important to I feel to the gang and the team spirit and everything is create an adventuresome atmosphere. The gang needs to feel the freedom to create, to take the initiative, to experiment. Man, feed that, encourage that, adventuresome atmosphere. Guy came to me and said, "Hey, I've been thinking about taking my guys over to Hume Lake and just go tubing through the snow, you know, in January. What do you think about that?" Great. So he called and got arrangements for a cabin and took a bunch of old inner tubes and they went over there and just had a ball, you know, tubing down the snow and over in Hume Lake, colder than a well digger's lunch bucket, and they just froze to death and it was a good time, you know. But it's fantastic. You know, I love that. I like guys to be creative and take their own initiative and go do things, you know. One thing, we had a Disneyland conference. Did I tell you about this Disneyland conference down in Anaheim? And see, we're about 200 miles up the coast, and so we came up with a bright idea that we were going to walk. It's 200 miles over the Thanksgiving holidays, and we're going to walk. And not only that, we're going to walk the coastline. You know, in and out. And when we came to a ridge line that just protruded out into the ocean, you know, we'd just skinny down our bathing suits and swim. And go around the ridge line, get back on the beach, you know, put our gear on and take off again. And we were going to walk to Disneyland. It would have been a great idea. The only reason we didn't do it is because when they scheduled the conference and our break in, we had about a day and a half or 2 days to get there. And, you know, you couldn't do it in 2 days. But that was just an adventuresome, wild, fun-loving atmosphere, you know. Man, they love it. Yeah. Another thing is they know they can fail without it being final. The guy goes out and he tries some little trick and it just falls flat. Okay, no big deal. And they need to feel that they can fail without it being final. I got a little sermon on that. No failure need ever be final. And I'll share it with you one day. Another thing is under this is I'd like guys to have a gambling spirit. I really like that, a gambling spirit. Man, if there's a highway chance, let's try it. You know, let's go for that. And with some wild deal, you know, man, well, let's try it. Let's go at it. And I love that gambling spirit. But that's another thing. Create an adventuresome atmosphere. And let's see, what have we covered here? We've covered the objectives, pray together, do battle together, get in the Word together, have fun together, an adventuresome atmosphere, right? Okay, I got one other thing here, two other things. One is work hard together. Get times together where you just kill each other getting something done. Get into things that require a tremendous sacrifice. You know, like our trips to Taft, or our trip over to Wood Lake Ranch one weekend, or our trip to Ed Virgin's ranch up there. And some of these guys, I remember Zeke took his team up there one day, and they went up and loaded 1,800 bales of alfalfa hay that weekend. Man, they just killed themselves getting that hay in. And that's fantastic. Really helped his team. Really helped his bunch. But work hard together. I put down it reveals a true character, and it creates unity. Well, those are the two things I have down. Tremendous for unity, and it really reveals the guy's character. If he's lazy, you can see him begin to skate a little bit. you can see, you know, he'll just kind of take a little break here, or he'll do this, it'll put him a little bit behind, or, and you begin to see the true character of the guy. If he's a little bit lazy, or if he's he'll let other guys do his work for him and this type of thing. You can see that. It'll begin to come out. And boy, the hard, hard work. And I'm not talking about, you know, we're going to come down to like we told, we were in Fresno one day, and so we called the Fresno Rescue Mission. I said, listen, we got 29 guys. We want to come over and do some work. Okay? Just like to come down and work. So they said, well, sure, great. Come. So we came over, and they thought we were a typical bunch. Well, you guys can kind of sweep the floor, and you got, well, let's get something done here. You know, how about the windows? They need the windows. Yeah, well, yeah. And so four guys, okay, you got to take care of this. Wash every window in place, inside and out. Okay, now, how about these floors? Yeah, sweep the floors. How about washing, how about wax these things and mop them a whole bit? Yeah, yeah. All right, listen, you four guys, and man, we left that place spotless. How about outside? Well, yeah, you know, wine bottles all over the place, and broken glass and everything. We went out there and cleaned off the sidewalk, swept the entire parking lot, everything. Boy, but work hard. Go at it hard. And it just do so much for your little game. Oh, that's good. Oh, yeah. Most of our work days are co-ed. And we went to the cotton fields, and the gal stayed in the home. And man, they said, let's get after these windows. And they pull out all the gear out of the cabinets, scrub the cabinets, liquid gold, all this stuff. Isn't that what it's called? Liquid gold? They did all that trick, and they relined all the cabinets and washed and put all that stuff back in. And man, looked like better homes than gardens. Opened up those cabinet doors. There it was. Beautiful job. Cleaned the windows. You know, mop the floors. You know. Yeah, but we go together. And they work hard too. Man, they hit it too. Seems like I had one other thing down here that is. Oh yeah, one other little thought on this, and that is keep your team hard and small. Boy, gang, get those guys in your team that really mean business for the Lord, and be sure of them before you ever invite them on. It's a lot easier to invite them on than it is to invite them off. And gang, be very sure of the guy before you bring him on the team. But keep your team hard and keep it small. Just the elite, the crack troops, the shock troops, the best. Good men, proven men, mature men. Not men that are novices. Not men that you never bring a guy onto your team to train him. Man, when you bring him on the team, he is trained. He is what you're looking for. And see, gang, your team is your recruiter. See, what's going to happen is people are going to look at your team and say, that is his product. And looking for an example, see, your team will become your example. And people will look at your team and say, oh, I see what the Navigators are all about. I see what this DSU business is all about. And they'll look at your team and they'll evaluate your end product, your end result, by what those guys look like. And I wrote down here on keeping your team hard and small, you know, I wrote down one thing is very wholehearted, and that's measured by his attitudes, his availability, and the quality of job that he does. Those three things. Then I wrote down another thing is he's single-minded, and that is that he stays on the objective. And I wrote down Philippians 3, 13, and 14 under that. You know, this one thing I do. Man, let's get after it. Let's press toward the mark today. He's a single-minded individual. Then I wrote down a fighting spirit, a can-do attitude, and I got 1 Samuel 14, 7. Do all that is in thy heart. Turn thee, behold, I am with thee according to thy heart. Fighting spirit. Then I wrote down a sacrificial spirit, a willingness to be inconvenienced. And you measure this, you measure the sacrificial spirit by whether or not another man's needs are just as important as yours. And gang, you can determine whether or not you have a sacrificial spirit if you are just as concerned about another guy's needs as you are your own. And I wrote down a verse, and this is Philippians 2, 21 and 22, I think it is, or 20 and 21. For I have no man like-minded who will naturally care for your state, for all seek their own, not the things which are Jesus Christ. You know, gang, in our ministry, I've been ministering now for 4 years, and that's not a real long time, but in that 4-year period of time, I've only seen one guy that really personified that. And that was a guy by the name of Peter Perkins. I finally told him that last year. I have never been around a guy. I have never been around a guy that was so that was as concerned about my needs. He was more concerned about my situation than he was his own. Naturally so. It was just naturally so. And you know, a spiritual gift is serving. That guy is sensitive. Man, he picks up things and he knows needs that are coming before most guys have an inkling of an idea. But this the sacrificial spirit, you know, another man's needs are just as important as yours. And you view them that way. And this thing about, I have no man like man who naturally cares for your state. Timothy was the only, you know, it's amazing, that Timothy was the only guy Paul could say that about. But boy, gang, that's what we're looking for, is that sacrificial spirit. I wrote down here, select men who have demonstrated these four qualities over a period of time. The wholehearted, single-minded, fighting spirit, sacrificial spirit, over a period of time. They're mature men. They're proven men. And the reason you want this type of man is because you get what you have. You get what you've got. Your team is your recruiter. The next generation will be just like the first because you reproduce what you are. I'm sorry? Under wholehearted, I wrote down you can measure it by the guy's attitude, by his availability, and by the quality of job that he does. You can ask the guy, says, listen, would you, we're going down to Santa Barbara to the Motel 6. Would you find out where that is and give us some direction? And so, the guy goes to the, writes the Chamber of Commerce and asks for a city map. The city map comes back. He reproduces it, or he takes a section and pre-hands it out and duplicates it off and gives every driver one. That's a good job, you know. Or the guy can say, well, listen, now here's the direction. We're all in our cars. Here's the direction. You go down 101, and then you take State Street. And then that kind of winds around a little bit, and there's a street that kind of bears off to your right. I forgot the name of it, but you take that one, and that dead ends, and then you turn left, and it's about four blocks up, kind of hidden off to the left. Half the car is going to get lost. But on the quality of job that he does, is his heart really in it? Or is it all nickel dime? I got to get the directions. Oh, big deal. You know, well, I'll... And what's his attitude towards his job? Does he do a quality job? You can check the guy's wholeheartedness. That's one of the ways. You had a question?
Yes. You said that you don't bring someone on your team to train them. Maybe I need to understand what your structure is and what you differentiate a team from something.
We're going for quality, quality, quality. And so I give my life to these people to help them in this area, and training is going on constantly. But I've got a guy out here, and you look at this guy and you say, boy, this guy's got about four or five needs, and if we could get this guy on our team, we could really help him in those areas. I don't want a guy on my team who's got, you know, major flaws that I... Sure, we might could help him, but you know what's going to happen? Let's say we got this young guy out here, and he's got a couple of problems, And so we decide to invite this guy on the team, or we consider that. And then we say, well, okay, we're going to have a personnel evaluation session. And now, is this guy going to understand when I say, you know, that guy, he is the biggest bag of worms. I have never seen a guy so fouled up in my life. Now, see, everybody on the team knows what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the guy's got a couple of problems. And how can we say it so that old Joe understands, see? And so what happens in reality is this guy... Everything you do, you're going to have to measure. And I say, now, how will he react? Will he understand that? If we go roaring out off on a weekend, and we take the team out, and we decide to work Sunday, are we going to have to explain to him why we've decided to work Sunday instead of, you know, going into a church service? Or will he? And so, see, what happens eventually is the youngest guy on the team, the most immature guy on the team, is determining what the team's going to do. And what's going to be said, and where we're going to go. The most immature guy on the team is now running the team. And I don't want that. I don't want a guy on the team, but the youngest guy determining what we're going to do, say, or think. And so I do not bring a guy on the team until he's a mature man, and he understands and this type of thing. He's proven. And so then we bring him on the team. Man, he just fits in like a finger on your hand.
Okay, but how would you work that into the situation where most of the people here will be, where... Probably most of us will be disciple makers, disciples.
Yeah.
How do you bring that in?
Well, then see what you do is you take this whole concept and you gear it down to your level. See, okay, now you set your objectives, certain objectives, and you're looking for certain. See, I've got certain standards for guys I want to have on my team. Maybe yours would be different. Maybe you'd say, well, I want guys that have been in a Bible study for a year, have proven that they're hungry for the Lord, and you can just write out some very basic characteristics, and you get that group of guys, and you can do something with that group of guys, and it really looks good. It'll work. The situation I've got now, see, is that these men are training disciple makers. And so, man, the standards went way up. And a man has to be a proven, mature man before he'll come in on his crowd. And, but you just, you know, you write out kind of what you want to do and what you need to be doing and where you are, and then you do, and what kind of guys you got, and you select two or three guys that that personify certain characteristics.
And then, so you're talking about selecting people, and you have a certain profile for
right.
the level at which you're...
For the level, at, yeah, that's right, right. That's right. Yeah, that's I'm glad you clarified that. Pardon?
That really helped.
That helped?
Yeah.
Okay.
What problems do you consider major flaws?
What problems would I consider major flaws? I would think somewhere in the area of character or something like teachability, that'd be a biggie. Some character flaw. You know, whether the guy wipes his nose on his sleeve or something like that, that's no big thing, you know, or, you know. Sorry. That was gross, man. Let's see. I mean, a little nickel dime, you know, you can deal with those things, but, you know, he eats with his mouth open, or, you know, stuff like that. That's no big thing, but if the guy's not teachable, or if the guy's, you know, he's got a violent reputation, I mean, a violent temper, or something like that. I mean, if he's got some major character flaws, that would, that, you know, the guy comes in and sits on a core team Bible study, and man, he gets so guilty and mad at our Bible study because we disagree with him. He just gets violently angry and everything. Well, I'm not sure I want that guy in there. And, I'm thinking about kind of major things, you know, that a guy's teachable. If a guy, a guy just not really hungry for God, he's not really longing and thirsting for God, that's major. Stuff like that. let me hit on this thing that has been brought up here about the, let's say that you're a dorm leader, okay? And by the way, when I went to the University of California at Irvine and went out and started looking for some guys, forget it. You know, you're not going to find these guys in 2 or 3 or 4 years. And I'd kind of like to have a team before that. But by the way, you know, you don't have to have a team. And if you know God and the people, then you just don't form a team. Now, Gid went to the University of California, Davis, and he started the ministry up there, and there was kind of a thing going before he got there. And he got up there, and he you know, kind of had a little rally, and about 75 people showed up first week. Wow, you know, not bad here. And so he got with the guys that kind of the leftovers from the last 2 or 3 years, he got with some of these guys, and they began to get together and have Bible study together, this type of thing. And after a while, these guys were not with him in heart. They did not have the same vision he had, the same mentality, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he disbanded the whole business. And he said, well, gang, what we're going to do now this next quarter is just, let's just all go out in the dorms and then witness and do Bible study and get some guys recruited and win some guys to Christ and all this type of thing. And we'll just have time man-to-man during the week and this type of thing. But as far as this, you know, this, doing this as a team and doing this as a team, we won't spend our time doing that, okay? And so they did that. The reason he did that is because he didn't have team leader material either, anyway, team member material. And so he just let them all go, and then he watched what these different guys would do on their own. And this went on for about two-thirds of the year, and then Gid led a couple other guys to Christ, and then kind of out of here, eventually, he'll bring it back together again. But he's watched this guy, you know, as he's gone through a year, maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years, and he's watched this guy. And now he can select his team because he knows what he's looking for. He knows the type of guy. And now he's got some men that have proven themselves maybe over a couple of years. And so if you don't have a team, then you can't form one. That's period. End of statement. Now, the first team that we had at Irvine, you know, I couldn't have compared it. It's not even the same ballpark. In fact, most of the people on our team today they were on the team I had at Irvine 3 years ago. So you know it's a vast difference. Man, these people have been growing and maturing and learning skills and developing the heart for the last 3 years. But the thing that's always critical to me, gang, the thing that's always critical to me is this guy wholehearted. He's only been a Christian for a year. He's only been walking, but is he wholehearted? Does he love the Lord? Does he want to grow? Does he mean business with God? And he may only be a young disciple, but man, the guy's wholehearted. Is he single-minded? Now, he may not have the skills and the maturity and the depth of a guy that's been around for 4 or 5 years and is a quality man, but he still exemplifies the same characteristics. He hasn't done nearly as many Bible studies. He hasn't led nearly as many people to Christ. He hasn't had nearly the experience. He hasn't dealt with pastors. He hasn't taken his gang and roared off and done something and this type of thing. But the characteristics are still prevalent in his life. Does that help any? Take these characteristics, these 3 or 4 attributes, and gear them down to your level. And just, you know, look at these guys. But did you have another question? Sally? Was it Sally?
Shirley.
How
many on your team are full-time students and how many of them are not students?
How many are students and how many are not students? Keep count. Debbie is a student. Carol is a nurse. Webster is a horticulturist. Echoes is an architect. Jackson is a school teacher. That's one side of the campus. Roberta Vine is a secretary. Zeke Zepp is a student. Old Z-square we call it. Old P-square, Pete Perkins, he's a student. And Dave Yaden, he's a student. And we've got so many days, Dave Yaden and Dave Eccles and Dave Webster. We call this guy, we nicknamed this guy Yadensky. His name is Yaden, so we called him Yadensky, and now we just call him Ski. Everybody in campus calls him Ski. He even signs his letter, Ski. We got isn't that a while? Dave Yadensky. So old Ski here, he's a student. Now, how many is that?
Four students and 5
non-students. Four, so. And we have the same requirements for both. You know, this guy works 40, 45 hours a week, and this guy's in school 40 or 45 hours a week, and, you know, 6 or 1 half dozen of them.
So what kind of time requirements do you have on them, or do you just assign them a certain area?
Yeah. Yeah, see, they exemplifying these characteristics. He's a fighting spirit, you know, and all this type of thing, and he's a sacrificial spirit, and he's a proven man, and I just give him an area. Pete? Listen, why don't you take towers 0 and 2 over in Sierra Madre, okay? Got it. And that's his. The guy winds up, he's leading, let's say old Pete was leading, he was doing a chapter analysis in Mark. He was doing a chapter analysis in Ephesians. And he was leading a book study in the DFDs weekly.
Besides meeting with you?
He meets with me for 2 hours a week. My man-to-man sessions are 2 hours at a whack. And then he meets man-to-man with 4 other guys. And he's a full-time student. And he works part-time. And he's got up to hump. And he plays intramural basketball. And he teaches Sunday school. Good man. Survivors make good men.
We're trying to get them to be wholehearted and single-minded.
Yeah, the wholehearted guy, it's the way he goes about it. It's the way he goes about whatever he's doing. For instance, let me give you a little deal. We had a house down at, we rented this house at Costa Mesa, and when we moved in, it was a dump. It was a dump. And so we decided we were going to paint it. And so the gang, of course, school's going on and everything. And so, for instance, a girl named Marilyn Thompson, boy, she was a beautiful red-headed girl that was involved with us. And she's down in San Diego now. No, she just moved to Denver to be with Helene. Fantastic gal, secretary. And so Marilyn would work all day, come home, eat dinner, head for the campus, had a Bible study from 7 to 8:30. leave her Bible study, come to my house, paint until midnight, go home, clean up, go to bed, and go to work the next day. And I never asked her to do that. I never even, you know, I wouldn't have considered asking her to do that. Chuck's house needs painting. Two stores, you know, we painted the whole inside, everything inside, doors, window facings, walls, everything was painted inside, two stories, four bedrooms, and, you know, all that stuff. But see, Marilyn's wholehearted. Man, she's just in that business. And so it only took a week. And so one night she went out, she had a Bible study, she went out and took the whole Bible study. She said, listen, gang, we got this house to paint. Took the whole Bible study and brought them over to the house and painted the house. There's this young, you know, this girl had been a Christian a month, you know, and here's this bunch of fun-loving people in there yelling and singing songs and painting, you know, and it gets 8, you know, and then it's 9 o'clock, and it's 10. And this young Christian gets a fantastic dose of what the Christian life is all about. It's fantastic for them. Then they all pack up and wash this stuff off their fingernails and, you know, get all that junk off their hands, and they take them back out, and she goes home. And that's what I'm talking about, just the way you go about doing something. You know, like the little illustration about going, getting the directions to the motel in Santa Barbara, that type of thing. Just the way he goes about it, that's wholehearted. Is his heart, literally you should say, is the guy's heart really in the game? Single-minded is basically that the guy does not get off into, he doesn't dabble around in this and kind of dabble around over in this and this type of thing. He doesn't get involved in things that don't have anything to do with his objectives in life. And we covered this under how to lead, in that he subordinates his life under his objectives. And that's basically what we were getting at then. He's a single-minded guy. Now that doesn't mean that he only does one thing. You know, because we're talking about our objectives, and that's living life and recreation and all that stuff. And gang, a lot of times, and like Dawson Troutman told a guy one time, he said, don't become so heavenly minded that you are of no earthly value. You know, a guy just read Christian books all the time and all this stuff, and he was just always in his study, and, you know, he was a very godly man. The only thing about it, he couldn't relate to anybody. And so a lot of times, and I'm sure we've been guilty of this many times, but a guy will see us coming down the hallway, you know what he thinks? Here comes the ding-a-ling ice cream man. Ding-a-ling, Bible study, scripture memory, quiet time, verses, how you doing, ding-a-ling? And that's all we ever talk about, this guy. Here comes the ding-a-ling ice cream man, you know? And but that's all your contact with him is always in that area. And I'm not talking about that. That, to me, that is not being single-minded. That's being narrow-minded. A guy so narrow-minded he could see through a keyhole with both eyes. That's terrible, isn't it? Well, one other thing here. On keeping your team hard and small, one other little thing here. This little book by Dr. Maxfield Garrett. Let me just read you these four principles, okay? Now keep this in mind when you're thinking about a team, that a few workers thoroughly trained, just a few, thoroughly trained are more effective than many superficially trained. Just a few, thoroughly trained. And that's much more effective. That the essential training for Christian leadership is character training. We're talking about your little team, okay? That the essential training is character training. Now get this one. That the most potent instrument of character training is personal association. You pray together. You do battle together. You study the Bible together. You have fun together. You work together. The most potent thing about character training, or the most effective means, is by personal association. Number four, character training is most thorough and effective when it is carried out under life conditions. When you're walking up and down those rows in that cottontail, man, that's life. That is life. And that's when it's most effective. Not when you're in a little summer training program. That's abnormal. And then let me sum all these up. All four of these are summed up in the last little paragraph. And this is a classic. Thus we have seen how Jesus lived day and night with 12 men for 3 years and made something of them. The implication for us today is obvious, and this is fantastic. To get results comparable to his, all you have to do is be like Jesus and live close enough to few enough men for them to acquire his image through you. Very simple. Boy, gang, that's it. That's all there is to it. All you got to do is be like Jesus and then live close enough to few enough men for them to get his image through you. It's very simple.